Suburban Farm Yarns with Monica Main.
It's time for our weekly Suburban Farm Yarn with actor, activist and green thumb storyteller Monica Main. Today, Monica and I will be discussing all things sweet peas. Good morning, Mon. How have you been and what can you tell us about sweet peas?
Well, everyone must know sweet peas because of the scent. I mean, they look beautiful. They're like kind of
butterfly-winged
flowers. Now, interestingly enough, they are a pea, but they're not edible. Don't eat sweet peas. They're not.
Oh.
Don't mix them up with the English sweet green pea.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely different species. So the sweet pea, a Lathyrus odoratus, and of course odoratus, yes, fragrant.
Mm-hmm.
So smelly. Fragrant, nice-smelling sweet pea. Interestingly enough, they do grow wild. They actually came from somewhere, like most things. Do you think you know where sweet peas might have originated, Maddie?
I'm not sure, but when I said before that they taste great, I was thinking of the sugar snap peas. I think that's where I got confused because they also taste sweet, but where do they originate from?
I'm going to give you a clue.
Give me a clue. Throw me a line, Mon. Give me a clue.
Do you know the movie The Godfather? The Godfather.
Italy?
Yeah, well, Sicily.
Sicily, yes. Beautiful.
And Cinema Paradiso, the Cinema Paradiso, that beautiful film. So the island of Sicily is where they grow wild. And a Sicilian monk called Franciscus Cupani actually sent some seeds. This is like in the 1690s, so a long time ago, hundreds of years ago, sent them to a teacher friend in the UK, and this teacher friend grew them, and everyone went, wow, what are they? And so it took a few hundred years, but then they started getting really, really popular in the Victorian era in the 1800s, and a Scottish guy, Henry Eckford, he dedicated his life in retirement to growing amazing varieties, and he took varieties to America, and the varieties we grow today sort of came from his original development of bigger, healthier plants, robust flower heads. And in Australia in the 1950s, they were so popular, hundreds of tons of seeds were sold. So, and then they sort of went out of fashion. I think some people think of them as old-fashioned, but I think they're back in fashion now. And they're really easy to grow. The time is now. Traditionally in Australia, you plant them between St. Patrick's Day, which is March 17th, and Anzac Day, the 25th of April. I mean, you can plant them after that. It's just about when the days are a bit cooler, but the soil is still warm. They do prefer slightly alkaline soils. I mean, Australia, WA soil is more on the alkaline side. But they do need food. They're what they are called heavy feeders. So I definitely dig in some compost or manures or, you know, enrich your soil. And you can grow them in as little seedlings or buy them as seedlings, but they don't like their roots being disturbed. They're very fussy. And so it's really best just to direct sow them. So just stick them, prepare your soil and stick them in. But remember, they grow tall and high like other peas, the edible sort. And so stake them, you know, put some bamboo stakes or garden stakes, you know, create a teepee out of three or four stakes, you know, and you tie them together or have a row where you maybe you've got string between your stakes and then you can to hold up your sweet peas. But you definitely, I would be putting the stakes in and then planting your seeds around the stakes. And I guess the biggest pest is probably when they're first coming up is slugs or snails. So if you've got those in your garden, be aware that they'll munch off those brand new little seedlings coming up. And once they're sort of coming up, they do need a nice full sunny position. So you don't want the ground to dry out once they've started growing. So it's kind of a good idea to mulch them a bit, but they take a couple of weeks to germinate. So don't despair if they haven't come up after a week. Don't worry, because once you stick them in the ground, water them and keep the soil moist. But really, if the soil's nice and moist, don't really water them until they emerge, and that's when they're going to be attacked by the snails and slugs, so just be aware. And when they do grow and you've got a lovely kind of wall of gorgeous snow peas, remember, deadhead them, which means, you know, when the flowers are spent, remove the flowers and the seed pods, And, you know, put them in your house. They smell amazing. And you don't eat those seed pods because they are toxic. Now, the jury's out on whether you should collect the seeds. You can collect the seeds and grow them again next year, but eventually the colours will fade and they revert back to the old-fashioned sort of the maybe pale pinks, whites. You'll lose all of the vibrant colours of the new varieties of seeds. So, you know, I encourage people to buy new seeds. But if you do want to keep your seeds, freeze them and then you can defrost them next year. So that'll just keep them ready to go again. Make sure you chukpu is really good because that's kind of a nice organic fertilizer that's got quite a bit of phosphorus and potassium in. And remember, the potassium and the phosphorus is what you want for the flowers. You can use synthetic fertilizers if that's your shtick, but just remember you want to promote flowers and you want to promote a nice healthy sweet peas. So yeah, keep the water up once they start growing. And they're so pretty. Just keep picking the flowers. And the more flowers you pick, the more flowers will grow.
They're a beautiful flower. I just did a little bit of a research on them because I was confused. I was thinking about the actual sweet pea, as in my head, peas. No, they are a flower and they come in a beautiful assortment of colours. You've got beautiful pinks. You've got that lovely lilac and gorgeous sort of peachy tones as well, and reds and whites as well I'm looking at, and dark purples. Yeah. They're beautiful. Beautiful colours. And as you were saying, make sure you fertilize them well, and they look like they sprout in multitudes. You know, I'm looking at them. There's someone who's planted them against a wall, and it's sort of grown up like a vine on this wall as well. They're a beautiful, lovely flower.
You put some chicken wire or something like that on the wall. They, you know, they've just got those little tendrils, like all pea plants do, little tendrils that they want to latch onto something so they grow up. So yes, definitely give them something to grow against. I mean, you can get the little Bijou, Bijou. They're a dwarf variety, which you can grow in pots, but so you still get the gorgeous flowers. You just won't get the great climbing habitat. Now, I have this hilarious book in front of me that was given to me by a friend who collects old books, and it's called The Modern Culture of Sweet Peas by Thomas Stevenson. And on the cover, it says, the cultural advice given in this book won the £1,000 prize at the Crystal Palace. Now, the Crystal Palace burnt down. This is an old book, over 100 years old. It's just, you can still buy this book by Thomas Stevenson. Obviously, he's an Englishman, so it talks about the English climate. And, of course, English soil is amazing because it's ancient volcanic soil. But if you cultivate your soil, you'll get the sweet peas. I mean, there's a picture of him on the front, and the peas are like 2 metres high. But the hilarious thing on the back is an ad for sweet pea fertiliser. Canary guano, the best fertilizer. It strengthens the stems, prolongs the flowering, increases the size of flowers, and improves the color of the blooms. So canary guano, you'd think, is canary poo. That's guano. And clearly that's a load of canaries doing their thing to have it be the most popular one in thousands of sweet pea growers, amateur and professionals all over the country use it. So clearly it's a brand name. It wasn't canaries. But Victorians were obsessed with bird poo. They went and got it from Peru and South America. They, you know, collected this bird poo, took it back to England, and you know, guano was the thing. But then, of course, fraud. You could have fake guano. It was always regarded as, you know, the best bird guano is the best poo for your sweet peas. But then it was profitable to make fraudulent poo. Often it was made out of human poo or, you know, mixes of blood and offal. Anyway, they made fertiliser out of all sorts of things, you know, peat, coal ash, wood ash, even baker's sugar scum. But the interesting thing, like they're obsessed with their guano, they're obsessed with dinosaurs. And it became very popular for the Victorians to be obsessed with coprolites, which is fossilized dung. So dinosaur poo became the most popular fertilizer in Victorian gardens. But that was obviously became fake as well. So I just got off on a tangent there. I'm not saying you need dinosaur poo to make your sweet peas grow or canary guano to make your sweet peas grow. Often the canary guano was just pelletized chook poo. So that's your guano. I'd say that's probably easy to get hold of, and you can whack it on your soil around your sweet peas to get the best sweet peas ever.
Yes, and we do want that. They're a beautiful flower, and I think I have seen them in many gardens, strolling by, actually, in Mount Lawley region, which we are broadcasting from. They're beautiful, and is this sort of the time that they're meant to grow, sort of these April sort of months?
March 17th, as I said, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, to the 25th of April, which is Anzac Day. That's the traditional period. Like, so now's the ideal time to get planting. Direct sow, they don't cost a lot. A packet of peas, they're super rewarding because they're so pretty. You know, I just, they take me back to my childhood. I'm just about to plant some, so I recommend them to everyone. They're a joy in the garden. They're so pretty and they smell divine.
You're on the record with Maddie Lombardi, and I'm joined by a series regular on Suburban Farm Yarns, Monica Main. We're chatting all about sweet peas on today's segment. Now, Mon, before we wrap up, I have a question from Al, who's just texted in, and he says, "Hi, Maddie, could you please ask Monica where is the best place to put a prayer plant in a pot? It's an indoor plant, but it was not happy inside. It's improved outside under the patio," and he wants to just get a little bit more clarification on that, if you can answer it. Stemming away from sweet peas,
good
but
on him. No, that's all right, because I've got a few prayer plants. They can be damn fussy. They don't like to dry out. They don't like hot wind or direct sunlight, but they do like bright filtered light. So a patio is good. I've got one in a hanging basket, which has been growing under my grapevine, so it gets nice filtered light. And it's been flowering. They're really pretty little plants, but it's in quite rich potting mix. They do like to be well fed. So I suppose out there in nature, they'd be, you know, in a rich, mulchy forest floor. So it probably wasn't doing too good inside because it could be too warm or, you know, not getting enough light. So often that's the thing. It's about finding the not too hot, not too cold, not too bright, not too dry, not too breezy. It's the Goldilocks spot, and prayer plants can be a bit sensitive like that. So if it's thriving on your patio or patio, depending on where you're from, that's a good thing. So bright, filtered light. Make sure the soil is damp but not waterlogged.
There you go. And especially now is probably a good time because we're not sort of getting all of that really, really hot summer heat that Perth gets over its December to February time in our very hot summer. Al just message said spot on. And thank you very much for your input on that. But yes, it's a good time to sort of put it outside. I know I've put some of my indoor plants that have been sort of not shriveling up, but sort of been a bit stagnant inside and haven't had that kind of nice sunlight.
Food.
Yeah, 100%. Beautiful.
Yeah, fresh air. You know, often when they're inside, they get dusty. Plants can do with their leaves being washed. So, yeah, taking your indoor plants outside and giving them a freshen up is a good thing. And it's a good time to repot them sometimes. You know, they've kind of sunken in the pot. All the nutrients that they've used up, all the nutrients in that potting mix. And so just repotting them can give them a real zingity zing and, you know, give them a new start on life and give them a burst of growth and food, which is good. But yeah, this time of year, autumn is just divine because it's not too hot, not too cold, and there's still plenty of sunlight around.
Beautiful autumn months. I'm definitely going to put some more of my plants outside before it gets to winter, and then that'll be a whole nother conversation in itself.
On you, Maddie. Good on you, Al. Plant. Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us on the record today, Mon. We appreciate your knowledge as always, your wealth of knowledge, and I'm very much looking forward to next week's conversation.
Absolutely. Happy gardening, everyone. Enjoy this glorious weather.